welcome to the SmackDown summary. I don't remember which number of episode this is because I don't know where I am. At the moment, I'm in a car park, walking around, trying to podcast.
I think it's 24 because when I posted the Raw rundown, it was 24, so it's probably 24. It's really early in the morning.
It's early in the morning for Sandra. It's busy for Kenny, but we're here. Yay!
We're going to talk about this SmackDown, though, damn it, because it was such a good show.
Yeah, it's like arguably my favorite SmackDown I've ever seen, so I really wanted to talk about it. So we're going to, it's going to be a bit of a kind of all over the place SmackDown summary because I don't have my notes in front of me, so Sandra's going to kind of guide me through. We don't have a ton of time, but we're going to try and get through everything we can. So yeah, let's begin, Sandra. You're going to kind of, it's almost like listening to The Observer. Usually Brian Alvarez leads and Dave Meltzer kind of puts his opinions in, but now you're going to be kind of leading the show.
Which I was not expecting to do, by the way, so we'll see how this goes.
So, yeah, but this was a hell of a SmackDown. Really good. So, let's talk about it, Sandra.
Yeah, absolutely. The show opened with The Miz coming out to talk, basically. He was cutting a promo, and he said that he deserved an apology from someone in the back, and she knows exactly who she is, you know, indicating that he wanted Renee Young to come out and apologize for slapping him in the face because he's still just completely upset that this has happened, right? And So, I mean, he waits, and Renee Young doesn't come out, but Dean Ambrose comes out instead. And it was great because Dean Ambrose comes after The Miz, but Miz runs away like the cowardly dick that he is, right? He runs away, and Maryse gets in the middle of them. And Ambrose looks like he's still trying to go after The Miz and whatnot, but Maryse gets in the middle of them, and then Maryse actually slaps Dean Ambrose in the face. And it was, I don't know, I thought it was a really compelling way to open the show because The Miz was on fire during this promo. I loved it. And yeah, I mean, what did you think of the opening segment, Kenny?
I thought it was excellent. I really loved, there's nothing better than a man shoving his wife in front of his opponent. Like, there's just nothing better than that because it's such a slimy, sleazy thing to do, which is The Miz and why we adore him and worship him so fondly.
What I love about it, too, is that Maryse is completely complicit in this. It's not like The Miz is shoving her in the middle of the situation and she's like, oh, woe is me, damsel in distress. No, like, she was moving, too, and being like, no, yes. Dean Ambrose, you're not going to get at my husband.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, there's, I know some people are not really digging the idea of, like, Renee Young involved in a storyline or whatever. And I do get it. Like, I mean, I'm the guy that loved when Jim Ross hit Triple H to an air fan, so I'm not the guy to ask. But I think that Renee Young, actually, being in there, is actually humanizing Dean Ambrose, and it's really working for me.
Yeah.
So
I was hesitant at first about the Renee Young situation and her being involved in it. But I think that they're playing that line so fantastically. I think I said last week that they haven't made Renee into a damsel in distress. They haven't done the WWE thing, right? Where it's like, oh, I must defend my woman. Dean Ambrose feels like he's more just sticking up for someone that he cares about and respects, yes. But he would do this on behalf of James Ellsworth, too, right? Because
yes.
The Miz is just being an absolute asshole to Renee, and that's not okay with Dean Ambrose. Because, yeah, like, he cares about her because he's in a relationship with her, but it's not like, oh, because we're fucking.
Well, that's what was interesting to Dean Ambrose. You know, Dean Ambrose is all zany and wacky, but, like, in all of his appearances, whether it's talking smack or on SmackDown, he's always like, listen, like, I don't own her. She's her own woman. She's gonna, if somebody's going to talk shit to her, she's going to slap the shit out of him. And that's it. You know, and I think that's, what's interesting is that Dean Ambrose actually has played the boyfriend role better than probably anybody else on the babyface roster ever has, you know? Which is
interesting. I think because it's not, like, so overblown, right? Because it's Dean Ambrose just caring about another human, but doing his own thing. And Renee Young is managing to just stay the professional journalist that she is, too, which I really appreciate because the whole thing is, why are you bringing our relationship into this? We've worked together for ages. This hasn't been a problem, right? Like, it's,
yeah,
it just, it feels real because they're kind of walking this line of like, yeah, you can work with someone that you love and still be professional and not just like be in love the whole time. Like, I've worked with my husband at numerous jobs actually, and it's fine. It's not like we're fucking in the back room.
Well, I mean, apart from that one time, right?
No.
Anyway, enough about Sandra fucking her husband and work. Yeah, no, I thought the opening segment was really effective and a good lead up for it. It's interesting, you know, the Intercontinental Championship main events SmackDown.
Yes, it does.
Whereas on Raw, the United States Champion really brings his title belt out.
Amazing, you know? Isn't it? I mean, on Talking Smack, actually, Daniel Bryan and Renee Young talked about that. They talked about, this was a show where we have a contract signing with John Cena and AJ Styles. This is a show where we had plenty of stuff going on, right? But the Intercontinental Championship match is the most important thing on the card. So, of course, it main events.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that. And, I mean, up next we got Baron Corbin versus Dolph Ziggler, which, again...
So good.
It was so good, right?
Like, here's the thing, right? Baron Corbin, right? I still am massively... I have massive problems with the t-shirt waistcoat combo. I do have issues with that. However... Like, he had the belt of a match last week, the triple threat. Sorry, by the way, there is noise in the background where we podcast here. It's just the way it has to be to get this one done.
You're on a street. Like, it can't be helped.
I'm on a street. There is music behind me. There is cars going past. Anyway, so the thing about Baron Corbin is, you know, he had the match last week with Dolph Ziggler and AJ Styles. And then this week he has this match with Dolph Ziggler. And I think that it was really, like, I don't want to say it was, like, classically great, but like I thought he really held his own. The match was quite compelling, and the best part, right, if you had to write wrestling for me, if you were like, okay, you have to use Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler and Kalisto in any way you want to, this would be my dream situation of these three people, is Baron Corbin beats Dolph Ziggler, Kalisto comes out to try and be tough with his chair, and Dolph Ziggler kicks him in the face. Perfect.
It was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. And I thought the match before it was pretty good, too. I mean, we live in a world, Kenny, where I wasn't annoyed to see Baron Corbin versus Dolph Ziggler again. Just the two of them.
SmackDown's a magical place.
The
thing is, it really did, I know we've said it for a couple of months now, but it really did feel like after Dolph Ziggler not winning again, something had to get right. Like, something had to change. Because we couldn't go through this cycle of these promos over and over again of like him saying, I've got to win this one, and then not winning it.
Well, that's always been the frustration of Dolph Ziggler, is he doesn't change, he's stale, he needs to change, something needs to happen, right? And now something happened, and it was perfect. And it all makes sense. That's something that I really loved about this show, too, because it makes sense that Kalisto would be the one to come out and be like, no, I'm going to help you against Baron Corbin. Because, I mean, Baron Corbin wins with the End of Days, which always looks so great. And it especially looks great when people run into the End of Days, right?
Oh, it's such a good move.
I love it so much. And so, you know, Baron Corbin has beaten Dolph Ziggler. He wants to continue beating up Dolph Ziggler afterward because Baron Corbin's an asshole, right? And It's just, it's fantastic. It makes sense that Kalisto still, you know, that touches a nerve for him because he's been on the, you know, receiving end of these beatings plenty of times. He's still not over his hatred toward Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin has bested him constantly. So he figures maybe Dolph Ziggler and I can team up and take on this big bad lone wolf vroom vroom motorcycle wolf, right?
But now I'm curious. When you were watching it, right, and Kalisto kind of gets rid of Baron Corbin, kind of, you know, he's patting Dolph Ziggler to get him up. Did you kind of go, oh, I think he's going to turn here. I think he's going to kick him. Because that's like, as soon as I saw Ziggler, you know how he kind of got a little bit in position for it?
Yeah.
Like, not fully, but he got a little bit. I was like, edge of my seat going, I think he's going to turn heel. I'm so happy.
It was really the only outcome that would make sense with this. Because why else would, I mean, Dolph Ziggler and Kalisto, I mean, I guess it's SmackDown, right? Like, they could have teamed up Dolph Ziggler and Kalisto. And I don't know if I would have batted an eyelash. But
I'm glad they didn't, but yes, they could have.
I'm glad that they didn't, too. I mean, it would have been, like, our least favorite tag team, right?
And then here's the thing, right? So they do that, and you think, okay. Because the thing is, some on Twitter, and I get it, some people are like, did he really turn heel? And it's like, yes, he did. Like, he did. Like, it's,
well, yeah, because, I mean, it continued into the locker room. It's not like he just kicked Kalisto in the face and it was a one-off thing. He goes into the locker room after that, and Apollo Crews, Baby Rhino, and Mojo Rawley are standing there having a conversation that I swear doesn't contain words. I swear they were just going, it was one of those conversations to be interrupted where they're not actually talking.
If I was in the WWE locker room, if I was a wrestler, if I was one of the boys, and, like, I had my choice of locker rooms. If I walked in and saw Rhino, Apollo Crews, and Mojo Rawley, I'd walk straight back out. Like, that would not be the locker room for me. I'd be like, where did the Miz and Maurice? Can I go change with them?
Well,
Like,
I think that's what
that's.
Dolph Ziggler was doing, though, wasn't it? Because he comes in, he's angry. I mean, he is just raging. And he grabs all of his stuff, and Apollo Crews is like, man, what you did to Kalisto, he's my friend, so that's not okay. And Dolph Ziggler just, starts going after Apollo Crews because Dolph Ziggler is a man possessed by all this rage and feeling now, and he finally snapped. And he's snapping not just on Kalisto in the moment, but also in all of the good guys in the locker room. I love it. I love Angry Dolph Ziggler. Angry Dolph Ziggler could actually be an interesting character for once, and I'm so excited.
And
I really
also,
like
if
that it
he
was a
if
multiple segment heel turn.
yeah, for sure, I agree. And I also think that him actually brawling with Apollo Crews was good because it was like, well, maybe Dolph Ziggler. I think Dolph Ziggler's a heel could do something decent with Apollo Crews.
Yeah, definitely.
So.
That's something that struck me during the segment too, was Dolph Ziggler and Apollo Crews actually could be a good program for both of them. And also a heel Dolph Ziggler, we haven't seen that in ages and ages and ages, right? So there are a whole bunch of new storytelling possibilities, whereas it seemed like the only story to tell with babyface Dolph Ziggler was "Ha ha, you lose."
Yeah, and I do think, I don't want to shit on him, but like I think this is a real test for Apollo Crews. If he can't get the game going with a hot heel Ziggler, it's a problem. This is
Yeah.
all the play, all the pieces are in place. It's like if you were playing like football or soccer, it's like me putting the ball in the penalty spot with no goalkeeper and going, Sandra, here's the goal, here's the ball. Can you please just kick it into the goal?
I'd
Like
probably
I'm.
still miss. I'm so bad at soccer.
You would not, but like that's the point. Like I would be setting the whole thing up for you. All you need to do is just kick it, and you're done. And it's like that's what they're doing here. They're setting Apollo Crews up. They're going, here you go. Here's a hot heel, someone who people have wanted to heel for ages. He's got a lot of reasons to be angry. Have a program with him. Do something. But Apollo Crews needs to show personality.
Yeah, he really does. And I
SmackDown.
mean, Apollo Crews should
SmackDown.
be much better at this wrestling thing than I would be at kicking a soccer ball.
I would hope so. I think promo wise, I think he's up there with your football ability, to be honest. But like, I hope that he gets better. Like, I think like
I
that's
feel
the
like he
he needs to.
can speak, but he doesn't
Well.
come off as believable or charismatic at this point. And I think something needs to light a fire under him, and I really hope that that thing is Dolph Ziggler.
Well, I'll give you an example. Last night, obviously I'm away with WCPW just now. And last night they did a show, 2 nights sorry ago. They did a show called Kirby Mania on YouTube. And one of the main event matches was Bully Ray, one of the Dudley Boys, and he was doing a promo with Drew Galloway. And he said to me, he was like, you're the tough. He had this line where he basically said, aren't you the tough guy that couldn't even make it in WWE? Aren't you like the guy that was in a three-man band? And the way he said it was so good that, like, you believe that Bully Ray is an absolute prick, You believe that character, and I think that's the key with wrestling characters. You need to believe it. And Apollo Crews has had a problem being believable in his role. He spells, which Sandra loves because Sandra loves spelling.
Yes.
Like, but I, spelling's not enough for me. It's like you're about to masturbate and he puts an orange in front of you. Sorry, not enough. Can't do anything with an orange. No, nothing. That's a really bad analogy. Anyway, so Dolph Ziggler turns
How are
heel.
you
It was good.
masturbating? That sounds
Not with an
complicated.
orange. I was trying to, but it's not sexual. Orange came into my head. Not to be sort of like
Are you saying like an
discriminatory.
orange as opposed to like a girly magazine, or an orange as opposed to some other fruit that you're utilizing?
I'd rather not get into my fruit-based masturbation techniques, please. Can we move on? Can we move on?
Okay,
Great bit.
fine. So
Anyway.
up next. Oh my gosh, Kenny, I love this segment so much. So we get Becky Lynch versus La Luchadora.
Yes, we do.
This
We do.
is
Who's
my favorite story on SmackDown.
very clearly not Alexa Bliss, right? At the beginning. Like, she's
No, no,
not.
no. And the thing is, Deonna needs to, like, she needs to put the hood up. Like, the whole point of having the hood on La Luchadora's outfit is so that your hair doesn't fall out of the mask. And she hasn't mastered this after 2 weeks of being La Luchadora. But that's fine. It's fine because the whole point of it wasn't to think that they were necessarily the same person. It was very obvious that when, Becky Lynch starts out the match with La Luchadora, and Becky Lynch is dominating, obviously, right? And so then La Luchadora goes under the ring and then emerges, quote unquote, from the other side of the ring, a little bit shorter. Whatever,
Little bit
starts.
short, little bit slender.
Yep.
That's a word.
Exactly. Gets up, does Twisted Bliss, which they called Did they call it the Sparkle Splash on camera? Because it's been Twisted Bliss for ages now.
I don't remember what they called it. I don't think they called it Twisted Bliss. They definitely didn't call it Twisted Bliss.
Yeah, I think they might have called it Sparkle Splash. Either that or I've heard people refer to it as the Sparkle Splash. I still think of it as the Sparkle Splash, but it's supposed to be called Twisted Bliss now because she's an angry little pixie. And, but, I mean, it's very obvious that it's Alexa Bliss, right? And so Becky Lynch gets her in the disarmor, which is continuing the story that Alexa Bliss is not a deserving champion necessarily. Like, she kind of won it on a fluke, putting Becky Lynch through the table. And they're staying consistent with that story. They're staying consistent with Alexa Bliss taps out every time. Alexa Bliss taps out every time she's in the disarmor. And Becky Lynch just hasn't gotten that chance to actually best her without interference and without all this craziness going. And I mean, it's so fascinating to me how this like crazy, awful, awful La Luchadora outfit has just made this so much fun. And I think it's making Becky really look good. And I mean, Alexa just looks so dastardly because now she's clearly in league with La Otra Luchadora.
So I have a prediction of where this is going. It's just in my head where I think it might go, and I would like to see. I feel like what might happen is like Alexa Bliss slowly edges out of this program and goes into a program with Nikki Bella, which I think would be quite good if Nikki continues her trend, which does later, and then like maybe like Luchadora is Mickie James. Maybe that could be Luchadora, and because like Becky Lynch versus Mickie James would be like that's my jam.
That would be incredible. That would absolutely be incredible. Yeah, I don't know how they're going to go with it. I don't know if it's going to be... Because La Luchadora right now is Deonna Purrazzo. And we know this.
Yes. I feel like... I know that you love Deonna Purrazzo. I feel like the longer they leave it, the more difficult it would be to reveal her as Deonna Purrazzo. Because, like, the longer you keep a mask on somebody, the longer the intrigue is there for the name that's behind it.
Right.
You know? With wrestling fans. And I feel like... I mean, maybe it will be Deonna, but like, I think that what could come out of this is two really good programs where, like, you know, say you have Becky and Mickey or whatever, that's like a, you know, that's a proper classic wrestling match. And then Nikki and Alexa can be more storyline based.
Mm-hmm. I would absolutely not hate that at all. In fact, I would love that because I think, you know, I mean, it being Deonna Purrazzo could be an interesting way to go in storyline. I guess I would prefer if she's a stand-in for Mickie James because I think it's a great way to bring in Mickie James. And I think it'd be interesting to know why Mickie James would align with Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, exactly.
I have so many questions, and I love having so many questions because it really makes me want to watch next week to find out happens next.
I love having questions on SmackDown because then I'm confident they're going to get answered properly.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? I thought it was really good, really strong.
Yeah, and I mean, Becky Lynch unmasking La Luchadora to be Alexa Bliss and then having the other one and having them just beat Becky up and everything. It's, I don't know, I just absolutely love it, but...
But if you're watching WrestleMania 9 with our Patreon review for David and I put a tweet in, there was two doinks and then there's two Luchadoras. They're copying WrestleMania 9 because it was good, goddammit.
I know, anyway. It's like your favorite. I still haven't watched it. I need to watch it because it sounds like it would absolutely be up my alley with all the togas and everything.
I actually feel like if you watched it, probably you and I would end up talking about it. Because I feel like you would have so many things to say about it.
Probably. Like,
honestly. This was built for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, part of me wishes that I could have been on it just because that's probably my favorite Undertaker match.
Yes. Yes, it's good. Chloroform.
Because there's chloroform, and why wouldn't there be chloroform?
Well, that's how else do you sedate a dead man who, well, he should be dead, so, like, clearly he should be dead already. Anyway, there's a problem, I grant you.
After La Luchadora and after all of that goodness, we have Daniel Bryan coming out, and there's going to be a Royal Rumble contract signing midway through the show, Kenny. Midway through the show, not in the main event of the show. I was pretty actually surprised that they didn't put on an Intercontinental Championship match before a contract signing, but we love SmackDown Live, and this is why, right? Because they're putting a contract signing right in the middle of the show, kind of where it belongs, because it shouldn't be a main event segment. And Daniel Bryan introduces AJ Styles, and, you know, John Cena comes out also. It's interesting.
Can we have a very quick nerdgasm over the idea that Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles are in the ring together?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so so cool. And even cooler is that AJ Styles kind of points out how much of a nerdgasm that should be, right? He says, you know, Daniel Bryan, you and I are cut from the same cloth. You know, we wrestled on the indies. We've torn it up. We would wrestle in, you know, I don't know if he mentioned bingo halls, but that seems to be what people always mention. But he's like, you know, John Cena. Do you see John Cena doing this? No, you don't see John Cena wrestling in 20 people.
I think the most important thing about this, well, not the most important, there's many things to unpack in the time we have. But, like, Daniel Bryan, once John Cena came out, Daniel Bryan left them alone.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't need to be there to preside over two men signing a bit of paper.
Because like, he's not on Raw.
You guys got this. You know, it's like, it's also like Shane McMahon. Shane McMahon is a great commissioner because he hired a great general manager. He's there now and then when he needs to be. But otherwise, like, you know, he's like, you got this. You're fine, Daniel. You don't need me.
Yeah. And I mean, the story isn't about the authority figures and who, you know, allowed what to happen and blah, blah, blah. Like, the story is about the wrestlers. And Daniel Bryan is very, very good at highlighting the wrestlers. He does the same thing on Talking Smack. And he's actually talked about this. He says, you know, no, my job isn't to be the main focus of the story. My job is to elevate the other performers because I'm not the one wrestling anymore, which kills him. I mean, he would love to be the one wrestling, obviously, but he's not, and that's the way it is. So his job is to elevate the other people around him so that people are compelled by the feuds and want to see the matches and want to see people get beat up. And after this contract signing, oh boy, do I want to see this match and want to see people get beat up, right? Because AJ Styles' points about John Cena are really, really interesting. You know, that he's going out the door. This whole story is really compelling to me because, you know, AJ talks about how, you know, they don't need John Cena anymore. You know, he says, you know, we beat Raw in the ratings last week because I'm the champion. We don't need you here anymore. Why do you keep showing up? And John Cena comes back, not with fine speech, son, or anything like that. I mean, everyone was expecting fine speech, right? He didn't say fine speech. He came back with, no, I am passionate about doing this. I really liked when he said, anyone else in my position would have been gone a long time ago, but I'm still here, and that's passion. And I know
and
a lot of people...
And he slammed the table every time he said, I'm still here.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Well, because I guess, like, AJ was saying stuff like, you know, my favorite line was, you know, you're not even as good in Hollywood as The Rock.
It's yeah.
Like, oh, burn. And I mean, you know, I like the thing that, you know, AJ Styles saying that Cena had said to him when he came out, you know, you need to beat me. And AJ's like, well, now you need to beat me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you need the win, not me. And then John Cena even said, the first thing he said was like, you just made a big mistake, you just pissed off John Cena. Like, of course John Cena would say that, do you know what I mean? Like, of course that's such a John Cena to say. And like, you know, in real life, outside of the story, we know John Cena contributed to SmackDown beating Raw in the ratings, but you know what? That's not the good story. The good story is that AJ did it. That's why he's telling that story.
Exactly.
To John Cena. And John Cena has been able to come back and sort of go that way. So that was my that was a great takeaway for me. I thought Cena was really good. He was really passionate. A little bit cocky, I thought.
Not a little bit cocky. Very cocky.
Which I like. I like, like, because like people keep saying, like, you know, oh well, like I just want to say this because a lot of people said to me, oh, I'm not interested in the Cena AJ match because I know Cena's gonna win. And I'm like, okay, you know, if guns were to our head or we were to make bets, I'm sure we would probably, most of us, bet that as the more probable outcome. But for me, I'm not 100% confident that's the case. Like,
I'm not either, not yet.
And I thought I might be, but for me, I'm like, I feel like John Cena's a little bit too cocky here. Like, I feel like he's, you know, like at the end when he signs the contract, he's like, you know, that's like, that, you know, I can't remember how he phrased it initially, but he said something like, you know, you can say all that, you can be all you can be, but I'm still going to beat you and take your title. And mm-hmm. I'm like, it's not really what John Cena's all about. He's not a cocky guy. So I'm interested. I'm intrigued.
Well, I think this new John Cena is a cocky guy. I do. Because I think John Cena is finally recognizing his place and calling out the fact that he's John Cena. And that's something I've been saying for the past few weeks that I really, really like and appreciate, because for a long time, John Cena just seemed disingenuous when he was trying to come off as like this humble guy and like, you know, oh, I, you know, just want to fight and I just want to whatever. Now he's like, I'm John Cena, deal with it. I think he actually said, I'm John Cena, recognize.
Which I, yeah, thugonomics there, when people were really kind of into like, I love that. Bring back a lot of fucking obviously. Another great line AJ had was, you know, AJ brought up the whole, like, him saying that he was wrong for telling The Rock he was a part-timer. Thank you. That's what should happen. Somebody should hold it against him.
Yeah, I thought of you actually saying that you wanted it used in a storyline, and I was hesitant about it, remember? Because I was like, I don't know, because John Cena will just turn that on him, right? They did it perfectly here.
Tick. That's it. And then, like, one of my favorite things was when Cena said, you know, you talk about passion, you know, you go where they tell you to go. I go so many places they tell me to stop.
Yeah.
You're here because you need to be here. I'm here because I want to be here.
Oh. It feels authentic. It really does. And I mean, yeah, it comes off as cocky because it is cocky. John Cena has the most right of anyone to be cocky because he is John Cena. He's absolutely on top and he doesn't have to do this anymore. I think that's where Cena actually is doing this better than The Rock in some ways, because The Rock, it felt like, you know, he comes back and da-da-da-da-da. And I mean, granted, I don't really like The Rock, so that's something, but he never felt like he wanted to be here and be a part of it as much as he was just like gracing us with The Rock's presence. John Cena feels like when he's here, he's here. And
yeah, no, I think as well, the Rock was coming in, that like wrestling is not his life anymore.
No.
It's part of his history. It's part of the fabric of who he is. And you can tell he's very proud of it, you know? Like, he's a guy that brings it up a lot in interviews, and when he's very good at trying to be like an ambassador for what a wrestler could become. And I like that about him a lot. But like, yeah, I think with John Cena, like John Cena, what I like is I get the feeling that John Cena very much dislikes people thinking he's a part-timer, he's ran off to Hollywood. I think it annoys him. And I like that he uses that to his advantage.
Yeah, I think that's where the authenticity comes from, is that it feels like John Cena actually in real life has something stuck in his craw about being called a part-timer and being called, you know, like having one foot out the door and people thinking that he's done.
100%. And I think Royal Rumble, and, you know, I do run SmackDown podcast, so, you know, I'm not like 100% like I am SmackDown, fuck Raw. But like, this match is so much bigger and so much better than the title match for the Raw side of things.
You mean the match, you know, that we've seen over and over? And by we, I mean you, because I haven't been watching Raw that closely.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, all of those things you say is what I mean. So yeah, I think this is great. I really want this to close the Royal Rumble, to be honest.
Yeah.
And this is the main event.
I mean, if the Royal Rumble doesn't close the Royal Rumble,
I would prefer this to.
Okay.
I think this is the match. Like, I think this is the main event for me. This is the one I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this. Like, it's so good, right? And this is how amazing SmackDown is. I got goosebumps from a John Cena promo, and then I popped for Baron Corbin's music when it hit.
Well, this is the other thing. People have said, you know, Baron Corbin coming in. Like, I mean, he was a little bit wooden in the mic. Let's be honest, right? He was.
Well, he's still fairly wooden on the mic. But, I mean, compared to what he was even a few months back, talking smack has done wonders for Baron Corbin.
Oh, excellent. He enters himself into the Royal Rumble. I'm glad he was the first guy to do it for SmackDown. And also, you know, he then talks about, like, you know, how he's going to... And then John Cena and him almost get into a fight. But what I liked about it was you used these two guys, Cena and AJ, the top guys in the brand, and you brought out Baron Corbin and you gave him a little bit of a rub. Excellent.
It was
That's
great.
What it's all
and
about.
The cool thing was, I mean, yeah, Baron Corbin looked like he didn't belong in a way, because, I mean, it's AJ Styles and John Cena. That is the biggest match, right? Like, as Daniel Bryan said, that's why he's making this match. Because, you know, one of AJ Styles' things is John Cena doesn't deserve it, right? Like, he's been gone and he lost to him a bunch of times. And so why does he get to come back and say that, you know, I'm John Cena, I get this match? According to John Cena, he can do that because he's John Cena, right? But Daniel Bryan made an excellent point that a general manager should make when managing generally, that he wants to put on the biggest title match possible. And this is the biggest title match possible. But Baron Corbin, as Baron Corbin, who believes, you know, like, I got here on a phone call. They called me to come to the WWE. I didn't need to do this either. They wanted me. That's why I should be making all of the money, because I'm the biggest star, right? And it's great that he believes that. And he's so cocky and arrogant that, of course, he believes he belongs with John Cena. And, of course, he believes that he belongs with AJ Styles. Like, if you remember, this is SmackDown doing the details right. Baron Corbin wasn't involved in the number one contendership match because he was off winning some medal award or whatever, right? And so he still has something stuck in his craw about that, you know, he never got the chance to be number one contender the last time there was, you know, what was it, the Fatal Four Way or Triple Threat? I can't remember. But he believes that he hasn't been given the opportunity to fight for the title, and he really wants to have that opportunity to fight for the title. So, of course, he's going to enter himself in the Royal Rumble, a battle royal. What's Baron Corbin's biggest talking point? That he's the winner of the Andre the Giant
Andre the
Memorial
Giant.
Battle Royal. So, of course, he
Yeah.
believes he can win the Royal Rumble. It's just, there's so much. There's just so much, and it all makes perfect sense, and I love it. And I loved AJ Styles kicking John Cena in the head so that, like, Baron Corbin stood tall at the end of that segment. John Cena did not.
Exactly. But you know what I love is that, see, I'll be honest with you, a month ago or 6 weeks ago, if you'd said Kenny, John Cena versus Baron Corbin, my exact reason, you know, it's almost like a, I mean, I guess, like, I'm not thrilled about it. But after this, I'm like, yeah, I want to see it.
Yeah,
Let's see
all I
it.
wanted in that moment was to see Baron Corbin versus John Cena, and next week we're getting what? Baron Corbin versus John Cena. I'm so
Yeah.
excited for Baron Corbin versus John Cena. What is this world that we're living in? It's great. I
Yeah,
mean, Baron Corbin standing over John Cena and being like, maybe he's right. Your time is up. Beautiful.
excellent.
Absolutely
Lovely
beautiful.
stuff.
But then next,
Lovely, lovely, lovely.
yeah, lovely, lovely, lovely. But backstage, we had Maryse confronting Renee Young. Renee Young was just standing backstage, you know, probably waiting for an assignment or doing whatever Renee Young does backstage because.
Well, she discussed what was happening on Talking Smack. She said she was being prepped for Talking Smack.
Oh,
She was
was
being
that what
prepped
it
for what
was?
was going to
Okay.
happen. She
That's
was
right, I
being
forgot.
prepped for that, and that makes sense because that's what she would be doing.
Yeah, of course, because that is her job, right? So Maryse comes to confront her, and, you know, Maryse slaps Renee in the face. And says, you know, you deserve that. Never touch my husband again. And
And Renee falls like a sack of shit.
yes, she does. And Renee cannot believe that she's just been assaulted by a performer. It's.
And Maurice is going to be fined $5,000
Yep,
for
Daniel
that.
Bryan brought it up on Talking Smack kind of right away. Renee was like, so, elephant in the room, I got slapped in the face tonight. This hurts. I had to get a makeup touch up. Like, I have a welt on my face. I don't like this.
Thing is, they have played this. The line that they've played this in is so fine that an inch over would make Renee Young a bit of a dick. But they played it just right. So, like, you know, what did she do? She slapped him as because he was unprofessional and basically, you know, called her out about something at work that she didn't want to talk about. She slapped him, stood up for herself. That's good. Now, the thing with Dean Ambrose, he was a security, you know, it wasn't like if Renee Young just gone to interview and he'd done that, I think that's a dick move. But he'd summoned her, you know? He was like the only person I'll speak to is Renee. So again, he's trying to call it out and stuff. And then, so then Ambrose attacking him, you can get it, you understand. And then Maryse attacking Renee Young, you understand that too. So it all makes sense and everybody retains their roles and positions they're supposed to be in, and it works.
And I don't get the feeling here that Renee Young is like, so Dean, will you please dress up as a security man and fight the Miz for me? I don't get the feeling that that was Renee's idea. I get the feeling that that was Dean Ambrose, because that's something Dean Ambrose would absolutely do. I mean, Dean Ambrose dressed up as the Mountie a few weeks back, right? Like, Dean
Dean
Ambrose loves
Ambrose,
dressing up.
he has a very questionable closet.
He really, really does.
Like, I feel like Dean Ambrose legitimately does have a t-shirt that says security on it in his closet.
He
For
probably does. It
whatever
wouldn't
occasion
shock
it
me. I
is.
mean, this was a
But you know what
security
I like about
polo, so it was a
this?
step up.
This was a 35-second segment that was excellent, did wonders for everyone involved.
It accomplished so much. And I mean, the line that they're walking is so perfect because, like, again, I don't think Renee comes off as a dick here at all because she hasn't done anything wrong necessarily. She was unprofessional once when she slapped the Miz in the face. But who's
But
been
she was
bringing it
provoked.
up constantly? Who's been bringing her into this time
The
after
Miz.
time after time after time? Miz. Miz keeps stirring it up. Miz called her out at the beginning of the show, right? Like, she's just trying to do her job. And she's like, look, I made a mistake. I stepped over the line. I slapped the Miz because he made a very inappropriate comment to me and questioned my professionalism, which I didn't appreciate. And, you know, she admitted on Talking Smack, she's like, I shouldn't have slapped him. Let's move on. And let me do my job and let me, you know, continue to live and work and do what I do. And the Miz just won't leave her alone, and Maryse won't leave her alone. So I feel absolute sympathy for Renee Young. it got me way more invested in the Dean Ambrose Miz match at the end of the show. And the whole thing, like, the characters are just so pitch perfect.
Yep, I agree.
And up next, we got Carmella versus Aaliyah with James Ellsworth in tow, because James Ellsworth is, you know, oh, when I missed a promo segment at some point, because James Ellsworth comes up to Carmella backstage and can't speak words because he's James Ellsworth. And James Ellsworth is even so bad at mixing up words, believably.
I hate him.
I know you do. And so, you know, the whole thing was James Ellsworth was, you know, like, oh, Carmella, match, good luck tonight, something like that. And she was just like, thanks, James. Like, you can tell she's completely disingenuous. The Carmella James Ellsworth thing is starting to fall into place for me. And I'm actually kind of into it, because Carmella's absolutely using James Ellsworth. And I kind of understand her motivation, because she saw how devoted James Ellsworth was to Dean Ambrose and willing to help out Dean Ambrose. So she's like, maybe he'll just do my bidding too. Because Carmella's a little dickhead. We know this. Like, she's not a good person. So, of course she wants to use him. But my favorite thing, James Ellsworth is like, oh, I got this for you, and hands her the shirt off of his back, because she absolutely needs a James Ellsworth shirt, right? But and then yep, when she comes out for the match, she's wearing the James Ellsworth shirt, but she's already modified it. Like, she cut it up and tied it up and everything within the span of not very long. I mean, it was maybe like 10, 15 minutes. I don't remember where that promo segment was. I missed it earlier. But Carmella's wearing, you know, her modified sexy tee version of James Ellsworth's shirt. James Ellsworth has gone to the merch stand and gotten himself a new shirt with his face on it. So he is not shirtless for this match. But Carmella versus Aaliyah, like, I was really excited to see Aaliyah. Can I just mention how cool it was to see Aaliyah on SmackDown?
Following the Oney Lorcan cameo.
Following Oney Lorcan and, you know, Deonna Purrazzo and all these people that I really, really like, that they're bringing in other performers, and that it wasn't just Carmella versus, I don't know who else is even around. That's the thing with the SmackDown women's roster, is it's not big. So there really aren't that many matchups that you can make. So it's good to bring in enhancement talent like this. And it's even better when it's some of my NXT favorites. So yay. But Carmella versus Aaliyah wasn't that much to say as a match itself. But the main point of it was that Ellsworth grabbed Aaliyah's leg as she was up on the top rope going for something. And that allowed a distraction so that Carmella could, you know, hit Aaliyah and then get her up for the code of silence and win the match. So James Ellsworth has proven to be effective and useful for Carmella, so she continues to show affection to him. I don't know, what do you think of this whole thing? Because I'm actually weirdly into it. I'm sure that you don't like it as much as I do, but
I guess my problem is I don't quite get why Carmella needs him. That's my main issue. Like, I don't, like, Carmella to me is devious, and Carmella would do something to get somewhere. And I don't get where, like, I feel like James Ellsworth needs her, and she doesn't need him. Like, I feel like she could have beat Aaliyah on her own, you know?
Well, she could have. She has.
Yeah, so I don't really see that. Sorry, somebody just beat the horn and said, wave to me. So, that was that. I guess that's my trouble with it, is, like, obviously, you know, we know I'm not the biggest James Ellsworth fan. It is what it is. But it's not that I'm not into it. I just kind of, like, I don't quite get the reasoning behind it yet. Like, I feel like almost like the opposite way around would work better. Like, it was fine, you know, it was short and painless, and I did kind of chuckle when he cost Carmella the match and did the most awkward celebration I've ever seen. But, like, yeah, I guess I'm just curious as to why Carmella would need, like, I guess it's actually a compliment to how much I think of Carmella that I'm like, why is she with him?
Well, I think that's the whole story, though, is why is she with him? On Talking Smack, that was the whole thing. They were like, what are you doing? And she's sitting there calling him Jimmy and everything. And then when Renee's like, so what do you do together? Like, what do you even do? Carmella kind of tipped her hat when she was like, you know, he just likes hanging out with me. And he, you know, when we go shopping, he carries my bags and all of that kind of stuff. I don't think Carmella needs him. I think she just likes using people.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. But I guess we'll see where it goes. I'm not gonna shit on it. I just don't quite get it yet, but I'm open to more.
Yeah. And I think it's a developing story. We got American Alpha versus Breezango for about 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Which did make me
were you gutted?
Weep. I was so gutted because I was excited to see the Fashion Police giving out tickets. Tyler Breeze hands a ticket to Chad Gable, who just kind of rips it up, throws it away, murders Tyler Breeze. I mean, this match shouldn't go longer than 30 seconds. It's what it should be for American Alpha to have a dominant victory, but I really wanted to see a little bit more from Breezango. It makes me quite sad that Tyler Breeze and Breezango don't get more.
For what it was, it needed to be this, you know? Because if you're going to have them, if you're going to have the Wyatt Summit and American Alpha thing be believable, Breezango are such a kind of comedy duo right now that, like, it does more for American Alpha than it harms Breezango, I think, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, intellectually, this is what it should be. In my heart of hearts that just loves Prince Pretty so much, I just want to see him wrestle.
But how do you feel, though, about the fact that we got the Wyatts on the screen and we're getting the big rematch next week where the Wyatts are vying to come back, get back their titles? Are you as excited about the fact that we're going to have a rematch as I am?
I am really excited about the rematch. Really, really excited. You know what the coolest thing about this video was, though? Did you notice at the end when, you know, because Bray Wyatt says nothing lasts forever and, you know, he wants American Alpha to enjoy their moment because reality will soon hit them and he's all creepy about it and he's like, you know, American Alpha's only made us stronger and the next week we're coming to reclaim what's rightfully ours. And Luke Harper is leaning forward and Randy Orton leans forward in his shot and goes, run.
Yeah, it was great.
It was just such a little detail that I missed the first time. Like, I watched this back, actually, because this episode was so good that I watched a good deal of it twice. And I was like, oh, that's so genius, because they're still teasing the dissension between Randy Orton and Luke Harper, but it's so subtle. It's not like any sort of big thing or whatever. But I'm really excited for the rematch. I don't know which way it's going to go either. Like, I don't know if we're going to get the Wyatts splitting. I don't know if we're going to get the Wyatts reclaiming. I have no idea. And I love not knowing. I'm really, really anxious for, you know, seeing it. But after that, we got the Nikki Bella and Natalia segment. And I really, really loved this, actually. I thought it was some of the best promo work that either one of them has done, which doesn't mean that they sounded entirely human. But for Nikki Bella and Natalia, I mean, consider the bar, right?
Yep. it's funny. I actually, earlier this evening, ran into one of our listeners, Tammy, who goes on Twitter by the handle Lady Boobs Tammy.
Oh, yeah.
Which Tammy. Is, and she, it's interesting because she pulled me aside and she was like, I really love Sondra. I was like, she's all right. You know,
thanks.
Standard fare. But she was saying like that she really liked how Sondra puts over Nikki Bella and how, and you know, all that sort of stuff. And she was like, you know, before listening to Sondra talk about it, I never felt like I could like Nikki Bella because nobody else was talking about it. And I said, well, that's the great thing about wrestling, you know, if somebody can help you be able to be okay with liking or not. I mean, you should really like what you like, you know?
I think so.
Unless you like Roman Reigns, which is you're an idiot. But that's fine. That's fine. You know, I like the Giant Gonzalez. I was an idiot, but I don't care. But the point being is that Nikki Bella, I think this was Nikki Bella's best promo she's ever cut in her career. Like, Natalia really schooled her on that promo that she cut the other week. And I don't think Nikki reacted quite as well as she should have for a while. But this is what Nikki needed to do. And again, I'm with you. I'm not going to say it's like fucking promo of the year or anything like that, but on a show where everything else is pretty strong, they continue. It didn't feel like it dipped in quality. That's the compliment I would give it, and I think that after the segment, I want to see Nikki Bella versus Natalia.
Yeah, I definitely want to see Nikki Bella versus Natalia, and again next week we're getting that, which is great. It's interesting because I find this story fairly compelling, and I thought it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot of realism in this promo, right? And I am a little bit of two minds. Cody Beck got in touch on Twitter and said that she's a little bit torn on this, and I'm with her because it is a little, I don't know, not really frustrating, but the fact that Nikki Bella and Natalia seem to just be all about their families and their men and that kind of thing and not really their own achievements. part of that kind of bothers me. It doesn't take away from me enjoying the story that's going on, though. So I'm kind of two minds about it. Like, I don't 100% love the fact that it's all about their families and their men and that kind of stuff and not focusing on their own achievements. I think that they're kind of walking a line with it. But I think there was a lot of realistic stuff that they're saying, though. Especially, you know, Natalia was the one who, you know, brought John Cena. Well, I mean, technically it was Carmella, right, who brought John Cena into the whole thing. And Natalia telling Nikki that she's going to get old and ugly and die alone and that kind of thing. And then Nikki retaliating by saying, you know, Natalia's using her family name. I thought it was really interesting when Nikki was like, so when we hear your entrance music or when you put on the sharpshooter, you know, you're not using your family for anything, Natalia.
This is what Nikki Bella needed to say. She needed to call Natalia out on her shit. That's the point. Like, the reason that, the thing I heard, I'm not comparing these two in terms of the quality level, just for anybody messaging me on Twitter to, like, you know, scold me. But the thing that worked at the CM Punk and John Cena feud of 2011 was that they both gave as good as they got, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They both fucking nailed each other with some home truths in the story. And that's why it was so compelling, because had Punk just been, you know, schooling Cena at every point and Cena not getting him back, it wouldn't really be that compelling. But both of them had good points. Both of them fought the corner well, you know, all that sort of stuff. So
I'd say it's similar to what's going on with John Cena and AJ Styles now. I think they're telling great stories in that way.
Absolutely. I think that's a good point in comparison. I'm backstage with wrestlers, hence we hear noises. That is what that is, ladies and gentlemen. but yeah, I think that that's the key thing is that I think that the feud is good because it's realistic. You know, it's good because people are calling out the truth that some people say about those two women. You know, some people say Natalia is there because she's a heart. Some people say that Nikki is there because she is with John Cena. You know, and I think that it's good to bring those things up if the two of them are able to have like a kick-ass match and prove that wrong. You know,
and I'm really glad that Nikki's standing up for herself better now and saying that, no, I'm not here because of John Cena. I'm in love with John Cena and I'm not going to hide it, but I'm here because of my work and my effort. And one of the things I really like about Nikki Bella is that, yeah, I mean, she looks amazing and she does focus on her looks some, but she does it on her terms. And it's her choice to dress the way she does and it's her choice to look beautiful, but she can still kick your ass. And I think that she, you know, attacking Natalia and getting into this, like, you know, absolute amazing story. And I feel the passion from Nikki Bella now, whereas before it seemed like it was forced.
Yeah, 100%. That, like, my problem is, I actually said to Tammy tonight, I said, you know, for me with Nikki Bella, one of two things needs to happen. She either needs to become a better wrestler or she needs to become a better character. One of the two. You don't need to be the best wrestler in the world. You don't. As long as you're a good character.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not the strongest character, if you're a great wrestler, like, one of those two will pull you through. Sometimes you get people who are great at both, and they're the kind of, you know, they're the megastars, really. Apart from Hulk Hogan, who managed to get by on one. But, you know, we digress. But what I think is interesting is that with Nikki Bella, I'm trying to phrase this correctly because it's quite a kind of complex issue, but I think the thing with Nikki that's interesting is that Nikki is very feminine, and she is very traditional in her views on relationships with men, etc., etc. Now, I don't think she's incorrect for having those views, because, like you say, they're on her terms, you know? It's not like John Cena is forcing her to do anything in real life or in Total Bellas, Total Divas, whatever show that you watch. And I think that it's actually quite a good thing for young girls that, like, yeah, it's great to have a girl who doesn't need a man and blah, 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 which is, you know, something that we've seen in culture the last years, which you absolutely should be pushing. But it's also nice to see someone representing their traditional values that they want to represent, which is what I think Nikki tries to do. Whether it hits or not is a different issue. I think that's fine because, you know, in the storyline on screen, you don't really see John Cena using his power to get Nikki Bella anywhere.
No.
And I think that's a key thing. So, you know, I'm a fan of realism. I think that with SmackDown, having Talking Smack and having Miz and Daniel Bryan and having Nikki and Natalia and AJ and Cena and Renee and Dean, you know, all these real elements are part of why I'm so compelled by SmackDown.
Yeah, and it makes sense to bring some of the realistic elements into it. I mean, it's something I saw Dave say on Twitter last night. David McCutcheon, who podcasts with us, obviously, he said
He had two heart surgeries, by the way.
Oh, did
Just so
he
you know.
really? Yeah, for fuck's sake.
Never talked about it.
Oh, never. But I saw David say, you know, it feels like on SmackDown, all the women stories are about, you know, who they're doing, basically. And I don't agree. Well, I mean, for one, Becky and Alexa is not about who they're doing, except as Lucy pointed out, if it's if you know one of them is in a relationship with La Luchadora, which could be incredible, but that's not the case.
Which, harkening back to Mickie James' former ways, would not be a far cry from what she's done in her past on screen.
Which could be incredible, right? But
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really feel like. It doesn't feel like a problem in the way it would in past WWE. Because in past WWE, I feel like it would just be like the women are all about their men and that's all they can think about and they're all damsels in distress. And I think each of the stories going on, the Carmella James Ellsworth thing, the Renee Dean Miz Maryse situation, and then the Nikki Bella Natalya story, I think they're all so different that it feels more like it's taking elements of their lives. And who they're with is a part of their life on and off screen, right? Like with Becky Lynch and Alexa, who they're with is not a part of their lives on screen, so it wouldn't really make sense to bring it into it. But I don't know. It doesn't bother me, I think, because it's all so diverse and so different in terms of the storytelling that it feels more like a character complexity than it does, look at me, I'm with a man.
And I think the reason I think the Carmella Ellsworth one is the one of the four that doesn't quite hit for me is I think that is a bit regressive, that story of like an attractive woman using a rather unattractive man to help her. Sort of thing. But that's kind of been done a lot of times, and it's been done better than they're doing it now. Whereas with Nikki and Natalya, it's like it's kind of like a fresh take on it. You know, like I don't remember the last time that there was a woman who was born into it against a woman who worked for it, but is kind of marginalized for having reality shows. Like it's a kind of fresh take on stories. So I think that the
It's
other
almost
women's
old
stories.
wrestling royalty versus new wrestling royalty, if you think about it.
Oh, 100%, because like Bella's pulling so much money for that company. Like you go to a show and when we go WrestleMania and stuff, you'll see that like everywhere there's Nikki, but there's Bella gear on women, because that's some women who go with their boyfriends, or maybe just feminine women who don't really watch wrestling, and their sort of way to enjoy it or their way to sort of get on board with it could be Total Divas or Total Bellas. Because I know a fair few women who watch those shows who don't watch wrestling at
Right.
all, and I think that's a it's a good mix. Like it's the same reason as like people say, oh, I can't believe they don't turn John Cena heel. Well, money wise and business wise, it doesn't really make any sense for them to do that. So you just have to kind of hope for what you can within the context of what they're realistically going to do. And I
Right.
think with John Cena, you can do so many interesting things with him without having to turn him heel. Would I love to see him turn heel one day? Absolutely. 100%. But there's not anybody in that spot yet who's going to pull in the merch numbers he does, who's going to create the revenue, move the ratings, all that stuff that does matter. You need someone like that. So for me, like the Carmella one, like I say, is probably not hitting as much as the other three because I feel there's maybe a lack of freshness to it.
Well, also,
But
it feels the least authentic because we know that Carmella is with Big Cass, and we know that James Ellsworth is married.
yes, yeah, so there's another element to that there. So I think that's the key. There's an inauthenticity about that one. But the good thing is there are four storylines on that brand involving women, and three of them are a big part of the show,
Yeah,
and
it's
that's good.
incredible. I mean, a year ago, I never thought this was possible, so it's great. Next, we had Dean Ambrose backstage. Joshua Fuentes attempted to interview him.
Oh fuck! Brunette number two,
Oh, this did
you
not
see
go
it.
well.
Like anyone who ever gives me shit about making the generic statements about the brunette interviewers, this lady just proved my point. Because, but I actually thought, and I made this up on Twitter because I was bored of like her interview style. Like, I actually thought that it kind of worked this time because Dean looked intimidating enough that you could kind of play it off as she was so flustered and intimidated by his intensity that she fluffed her line, you
I
know?
mean, I'm more
Like,
than willing to go with it. I
yeah, like
felt
that.
bad for her. I felt so bad for her. She stumbled over her words so badly, but Dean Ambrose, bless him, just steamrolled right through and was like, am I ready for the match? I'm going to take away what's most important to The Miz, and it's not his wife, it's his Intercontinental Championship. And then she just sort of stood there like a deer in the headlights as he walked away.
I
So he
realize this.
saved it.
He did. I think Dasha Fuentes is essentially the daughter of Mike Adamley. That's what I'm realizing. The more that we go on, was she not the same one that said James Ellis one week as well?
Yeah, that's Dasha.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, for everyone who says Dasha has no personality, I think everybody's forgetting about our beloved robot Devon Taylor from NXT. Dasha's the
What's it?
next
I think
version of this, but it's
the
like
thing
they
that
tried to
Devon.
upgrade Devon Taylor's software or something, and so they gave it a little bit more personality and charisma, but there was a glitch in the software, and so now it malfunctions.
Well, I think the thing with Devon is Devon benefits from being on NXT, which is like not as big a show in terms of, viewership. So she could have got away with it more. Whereas like Dasha, to be fair, like Andrea, I do know the names, people. Andrea and Charlie are not as bad. Like I think, and I'll be honest, like, I don't mean it about it. I genuinely do. It takes me a minute every time to figure out who it is. Like they're very similar in the way that they dress and have their hairstyle. It's too similar. Anyway, but I think that Charlie and Andrea sometimes have interviews that are okay and they're fine and they're serviceable. But I think Dasha just, I don't know what, I mean, I think the thing is, Dasha Fuentes is clearly not a wrestling fan. To me. For me, like, I've seen people work interviews and work different things and, like, there's things that you fluff, you don't always get it perfect, but, like, I would bet you $100 right now she's not a wrestling fan, which is fine. You don't need to be, you know? Lex Luger was never a wrestling fan. He became a big star. But I think she needs to stop fluffing lines. She really does. It's
It's
getting
gotten
to a
pretty
point.
bad lately. I think Dasha's a better ring announcer than interviewer, and I think Andrea's a better interviewer than ring announcer, and they have Andrea ring announcing in NXT right now. It's kind of strange, but
Yeah, well, like JoJo was doing backstage interviewing, and she was fine. But like, I like JoJo as a ring announcer. I'm
I
a
think
big
she's
fan of
really good
her.
as a ring announcer. That's true.
Yeah, I like her.
Yeah, but I mean, after Dean Ambrose saved that promo segment, we got Dean Ambrose versus The Miz for the WWE Intercontinental Championship, and Dean Ambrose won the championship, Kenny. I did not expect this at all.
Fuck me, I did not see this coming. Like, I'm one of these like awful wrestling fans who goes, well, I think The Miz is going to retain. I just going to sit back and enjoy it on the basis of what I think is going to happen. Because, like, I just never thought there was any chance he was going to. And then Dean Ambrose, when Maurice got the best part of this match, without a shadow of a doubt, was when Maurice slapped Dean Ambrose on the outside, which is, by all accounts,
A
a
disqualification.
disqualification, without question. The
And the ref, to
referee.
his credit, was going to disqualify Dean Ambrose.
But the referee looks outside immediately and it closes up and the referee just shouts, "Why would you do that?" Oh, that referee. Give him a medal. It was so funny. Now, I think the great thing about this is Miz kind of has a case here,
Oh, he does
as he had on
absolutely.
Talking Smack.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, sorry, did we cut off there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I heard the Miz absolutely has a case there. Something talking smack.
The Miz absolutely has a case. And on Talking Smack, he was mentioning it, and he by all accounts should have been disqualified.
Oh,
That
he
is the
absolutely should
finish.
have. I mean, it was the ref was going to disqualify him. It wasn't one of those situations where the ref sees something in plain view and just ignores it for some reason. Dean Ambrose had to get in the ring and convince the referee, "No, don't disqualify the Miz. I want this match to continue." And I mean, I guess it's the referee's discretion to abide by that if he wants to. And I mean, it was
I guess
interesting too
so.
because I mean, the Miz even hit Dean Ambrose with the belt at one point too, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I see, for me, like the thing, I'm not totally cool with the referee sort of just deciding to not do the DQ.
I'm unsure about how I feel about it, which really lends to Miz having a case and being as upset as he was on Talking Smack. I mean, that promo on Talking Smack, oh boy.
He couldn't even formulate a word.
He was just
drooling. But the good thing about it is that the fact that I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know if I'm okay with the referee doing that, and you're like, oh, I'm torn, again, lends to the story, you know, of Miz and having to sort of figure out what happens. And, I know some people were very surprised. I thought that the ending to this was going to be Renee Young slapping Maryse, but I'm very glad that they kept that moment.
I'm glad it's not. I don't want her to cross that line again, at least not right now.
I want her to cross that line. Like, I want her to slap Maryse. I don't think it's time, though.
I think if she did, then it would... I really like the professionalism that she's been maintaining, and so I want... If she crosses that line again and slaps Maryse, I want it to be because she's been goaded and goaded and goaded and goaded and goaded, because her trying to maintain her professionalism and do her job is what's making the story so much more compelling for me.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad she didn't do this. I think she should do it at some point. I think that, you know, that's where the story should inevitably get to that point where she does do it. But again, like you say, she has to be goaded into doing it. You know, she shouldn't just do it out of nowhere. But maybe that's the Royal Rumble in the Alamo Dome. Maybe that's another episode of SmackDown. There's places it can happen. But I'm actually okay. I know some people were concerned about, you know, him winning the Intercontinental Championship. Maybe, like, is that a hot potato kind of thing? But I didn't really feel that way. I was kind of into it. Like, I didn't think I would be. If you'd said to me, you know, Dean Ambrose is going to win the Intercontinental Championship again, I don't know if I would have been quite excited about it. But I like the story.
I mean, I'll admit my first reaction was to go, shit, 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 at the television. But, I mean, in all fairness to Dean Ambrose, and Dimitri on Twitter called me out on this, and he was right too, because I said something like, Miz got me interested in a Dean Ambrose thing, and he was like, come on, be fair, Dean Ambrose has definitely been pulling his weight here, and he has. Dean Ambrose has actually been very good lately, and, I mean, coming from me, you know, that's hard for me to say sometimes, because I'm not the biggest Dean Ambrose fan, but everything I've wanted from Dean Ambrose, right, character consistency, better in the ring, I mean, I still don't think he's super great in the ring, but this match with the Miz was good. When he feels like he cares, he's a lot better in the ring, and it feels like he cares right now and has something to kind of sink his teeth into, and I think that really helps. So I mean, he's actually been a fairly consistent character over the past month. I mean, is that some kind of record for Dean Ambrose?
Yeah, it's officially a record. It's an inside growth record for sure. We're calling it.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm into the story. I mean, the idea of Ambrose as champion doesn't thrill me necessarily, but it doesn't feel like just passing the belt around, like it doesn't matter, though. Like, I feel like Ambrose winning it feels like a bigger deal than if Dolph Ziggler had won it again.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the key here is the story. The story is what's happening. And the Intercontinental Championship, main event, SmackDown... And I get that some people are complaining about the title change, but for me, you know, the fact the title's changed, I don't see it as much as hot potato. I see it more, Dean Ambrose is now more interesting, The Miz has got a good story, and it main evented the show and made it feel more special. So for me, the pros definitely outweigh the cons.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it feels like a really big deal. It feels like a big title change, and it feels like something that I do want to see where they go with it. So, I mean, yeah, the story is going to... tell the story? I don't even know. Words are hard. Just call me Dasha. But
next week, my God, we've got three matches. American Alpha and the Wyatts for the tag titles. John Cena, Baron Corbin, and Nikki and Natalya. What a show.
Yeah. I mean, this week's SmackDown was excellent. Last week's SmackDown was excellent. Next week's SmackDown is set to be excellent. You know what's excellent? SmackDown Live. And I love it. It's
great.
It's a magical place. But I think we're about done here. I know that you need to take off, so... Any final parting words for the people?
Well, SmackDown was a big thumbs up for me. The best way I can describe SmackDown is that I don't watch Raw live. I watch it on the Tuesday morning, but with SmackDown, I make a point of staying up for it. So that's the best compliment I can give it.
I really wish that I could watch SmackDown live, like, to the point where I'm considering switching nights at work, because...
You absolutely should.
I'm considering working Mondays instead of Tuesdays, because that would be excellent. I don't know how feasible it is, but...
Thank you, Sandra, for being so available for me to have to do three sets of recordings to get this one podcast out. Thank you very much.
It's been a mishmash, but, you know, we got it done. We talked about SmackDown, and that's the important thing.
We did. Thanks, everyone. I really appreciate you listening and supporting. Patreon.com/ropes. All that good stuff.
Yep. Twitter at SandraRuthRW, at KennyMC1985, at Inside_the_ropes. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Sorry this seems like such a haphazardly thrown together show, because it kind of was, but we wanted to get something out for you. So until next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You can look, but you can't touch. You keep dreaming on the stars above.